Week 124 of Brad is Branded Thoughts. And it's been a couple of weeks now since we've been with everybody. On our last show, we had Trey Dickerson on our show. We talked NBA hoops. We had our NBA insiders, which I find it convenient that they're not here, Alex, as I'm joined by Alex Barada. You find it interesting that they're not here as the playoffs just started?
Yeah, I mean, you'd think that being such experts that they'd be more interested in talking about what's going on, but I'm wondering if they've watched much of what's going on or what their situation is with cable and internet and all that.
Yeah, so if we do have some glitches in our podcast today, we do apologize. We're working to get those glitches ironed out. A lot of it has to do with internet signal. A lot of people's home internet is knocked out. Alex, you guys still don't have home internet, so you're working off data. I'm working off data, and our data's slow. U.S. Cellular's having problems with its towers, so bear with us. We're gonna try our best to get through this. If we have to tone this thing down or dumb it down for the sake of quality, we will transition to a phone-only call. But for now, we're operating with our normal technology, and we'll see if we can get through it. Again, we apologize for not being with everybody sooner. But again, if you haven't been following the news here in the Midwest, the derecho, as it's being termed, moved through the U.S. A week and a half ago. So Monday, would that have been a Monday the 10th, late in the morning, hit Ames just before 11:30, and probably hit Marshalltown around noon, and left a path of destruction all across Iowa, whether you're talking in Ames or in Marshalltown, Newton. Cedar Rapids has gotten hit particularly hard. Alex, what's cleanup efforts? What are they looking like right now in Marshalltown?
Well, I'm not sure what the power situation is. I know we got power back a couple of days ago, but it's mostly cleanup now, and the city's coming around and picking up trees and stuff. But there's just piles of limbs and brush everywhere. It's pretty crazy. Like, I think they said that Marshalltown and Cedar Rapids were the worst hit, but this thing was so wide that it cut a pretty big path through Iowa. I even talked to some people from Burlington here today, and they said even they got it wasn't damaging like it was up here, but even they got the effects of this thing. So it was just a massive storm. But yeah, we're mostly done, I think, with, you know, cutting down trees and stuff, and now it's basically just hauling everything away.
Ames, we are fortunate here in our part of Ames. Parts of Ames have been out of power up until this week. I'm not sure if everybody's back yet. We only had power out for a day and a half, and at the time it felt like a long period of the power outage. But man, if you look at it from comparing our situation to those in Marshalltown, and I'm sure those in Cedar Rapids and Toledo. I know Toledo, as far as I'm aware, Toledo has no power still. Tama Toledo, a small pair of towns in between Cedar Rapids and Marshalltown. So it's been a crazy month, but it's on par for the year, Alex. You've got, I know we talked about this on our last show. This was before the storm hit. We talked about all the crazy things that have happened this year, and it just is not getting any better. Now, one would think things are going to improve somewhat, but we're here primarily today. We're going to get the Krukos back on here, hopefully, probably a week from now, this following weekend. But it's just too many logistics with people's power being out and home internet, and it's just too much to swing. But we had to record this show today, Alex. And as far as this show is concerned, we're primarily here to talk about what's happened in the world of college sports. And first of all, if you haven't been following, the Big Ten made the announcement. In fact, it's been literally a week and a half ago now. It was the day, same day that the derecho hit, that we started hearing some strong rumblings that the Big Ten was planning on canceling its fall football season. Now, I know, Alex, we had talked about, we've talked about this ad nauseum over the past month or two, but we've talked about the outlook on fall football, and you'd been skeptical the entire time. I had said pretty definitively that I thought college football will happen in the fall. I stand by that. I think college football will happen this fall. Whether the Big Ten will play or not, that's a different story. I think it's clear the Big Ten is not going to play. But Kevin Warren comes out after rumblings that the Big Ten was planning on canceling its fall season. And this was, keep in mind, what, 4 or 5 days after they had released a schedule? Actually, we'd started hearing rumblings about it like 3 days after they had released the revised 10-game schedule, which, Alex, I don't think we ever even got to record a show talking about that schedule, did we?
I don't recall that.
I don't think we even talked about that 10-game conference-only schedule, which I was excited to talk about. I was excited to see how it would play out. I don't think the Big Ten ever had intention of playing that schedule. I just don't. Now, we're going to get into reasons why I don't believe that, and I'm sure we can debate a little bit on here, but what was your, again, just initial reaction to the Big Ten deciding at that time? Okay, we're not, again, you said that you thought the Big Ten was planning, was probably going to cancel along with the rest of the college football world, but at that time, were you surprised, and how, if so, how surprised were you that the Big Ten chose to cancel when it did?
Well, honestly, I don't think I was expecting anyone to really cancel this early. I kind of had the feeling that we were probably going to get a bit into the season, you know, a few games in, and then we're going to start having a lot of players dropping out for quarantine, and then it would probably get shut down is probably more what I was leaning towards. And I was surprised that the Big Ten, in particular, was the first domino to fall with that, canceling the whole season. I was a little surprised by that. I wasn't really expecting that. So overall, though, I'm not terribly surprised with the whole situation. I think there's so much it's so ambiguous, this whole situation. I don't think different conferences really know what to do. We do obviously have a lot better idea of what this virus looks like and how it transmits and all that than we did back in March. But I think they're still in a tough spot. And, but yeah, I was definitely surprised by Big Ten. I don't know if you heard, I think it was last night that Warren came out and said, cause there was so many questions about, you know, with other conferences not really following Big Ten's lead, you know, about the validity of what they decided. And he basically came out and said that, you know, they talked with medical experts and that there was no chance of them revising this decision. So I don't know if you caught that. I saw it on the news, I think, last night.
Yeah, I caught that. And the Big Ten parents, a lot of Big Ten parents, including the Iowa parents, including some parents from Ohio State, I'm sure some from Nebraska and Penn State and perhaps others, will be rallying outside the Big Ten offices tomorrow. They are not satisfied with the response from Kevin Warren. And I'm not satisfied with the response from Kevin Warren. Here's why I'm so adamant about the idea that we're going to cancel college football when they did. All right, and I'm talking Big Ten football because, again, the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12, they're all still planning on playing. Now, the Pac-12 opted out. I'm not going to get into the Pac-12. The Pac-12 has a lot of other things to – the Pac-12 is not the giant financially that the Big Ten is. Now, this is not just a financial decision, and I'm going to get into that. But the Pac-12 actually has been pretty transparent. They released some information about why they decided to cancel, but the Big Ten canceled without answering any questions. Kevin Warren, on the day he canceled, the day that he claimed there was a vote and the presidents of the Big Ten decided to cancel, who he, by the way, Kevin Warren answers to the presidents and the provost of the Big Ten. He is not a dictator, okay? Now, they opted to cancel. He goes on the Big Ten Network. Dave Revson, tremendous. I love Dave Revson. I've loved him since the day he since the day the Big Ten Network launched. But Dave Revson, credit to this guy who, again, the Big Ten Network is largely funded by the Big Ten Conference, almost completely funded by the Big Ten Conference. And, of course, the different schools are paid as a result of that TV network. But Kevin Warren was asked several questions and really didn't answer a single one of them. One of the questions that was, I thought was kind of epitomized the entire interview was Dave Revson asked Kevin Warren, hey, Scott Frost in Nebraska has said, if they're not going to let us play, we're going to go somewhere else to play. We're going to play in the Big 12. We're going to play in the SEC. And he was asked pointedly, can they do that? And Kevin Warren gave his typical politician type answer. Dave Revson came right back to the question again. He said, so to clarify, Kevin, can they do that? Well, I don't want to get into that. This is not the time or the place. Why isn't it the time or the place? Every answer he gave was political. And I say political, I'm not saying it was a political per se answer, but it was delivered in a very political way. He never answered any questions, and I think rightfully so. The parents were upset, players were upset. We saw Heisman Trophy runner-up Justin Fields. He's got a petition out there that's got over 30,000 signatures to play this fall. I don't think it's going to matter. But it's just it's interesting because my opinion on this season has changed drastically over the past month. I think when we all came on the show a month ago back in July, first of all, the nationwide cases were about 70,000 a day. And I know that new cases, that's not the only number that matters. I don't think that number matters very much at all, because there's a lot more that goes into this data that these conferences would have to look at. But Alex, we were about 70,000 per day new cases in the U.S. about a month ago. Do you know what we're at right now?
I think it's about half that, isn't it?
Yeah, we're sitting right at 40,000. Okay. 40,000 per day. So we're almost to half of the 75,000 or the 70,000, over 70,000 that we were getting new cases per day. And, I'm not saying the virus is going away. And I know that some of the experts are saying that it could come back with a vengeance once things get cold. I don't know that I buy into that either. I'm not a medical expert, but did it really go away with the heat?
No, they
didn't go away with the heat at all.
Yeah, at the beginning of summer, they're saying we're going to have a second wave in fall. Well, there was no first wave. This is one big wave, and it's a big, slow burn. And this is what's happened. And early on, we didn't know because, the flu pandemic in 1918 acted a lot differently, much more differently. It was a big wave in the fall. But this has basically stuck around and has only responded to our measures, shutdown measures is the only thing that's really affected it. So, it's a different situation as far as it coming back in the cold. I mean, it's been hitting the hottest states during the hottest part of the year, which maybe you say, oh, that's the same logic because people are inside in air conditioned areas. And I'm sure there's validity to that, but I don't think you're going to see a massive change in cold weather, hot weather. I don't think this virus really cares. So
back to my point here, the numbers have gone down. A top medical expert at Duke has come out and said that he views college football as being safe to play this fall. Duke. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Alex. Is Duke a football school?
Not really.
And where would you say Duke ranks nationally as far as medical schools, medical powerhouses across the U.S.?
I have no idea.
I could be wrong on this, but I always viewed them towards the very, very top of the medical universities across the country. And here you have a medical expert saying he thinks it's safe to play this fall. Now, keep in mind, this is also in the Southeast, where, again, I know primarily a lot of the cases have stemmed from Miami in recent months, but this is stemming from a conference, the ACC, where you've got a couple schools in Florida, including one school who's in Miami. the Miami, Florida University. And you have a medical expert saying he believes it's safe to play. Now, one of the reasons why I've heard, and Kevin Warren confirmed this yesterday, that and he kept saying there's in his interview, there's so much uncertainty. Well, one of the things he continued to say is there's so much uncertainty as it relates to myocarditis. And if you don't know what myocarditis is, you can do a quick Wikipedia search or just go on Mayo Clinic, their website, and read up on it. It's basically a heart condition that can develop as a result of a virus, any virus, not just this corona, this novel coronavirus, any virus, including the flu, okay? Including the flu. And there was a student athlete at Indiana who has shown, apparently, allegedly has shown signs of myocarditis after having COVID-19 at one point. And I think that scared the living bejesus out of the Big Ten. Kevin Warren has repeatedly said that this is – well, repeatedly. I shouldn't say repeatedly. He says it twice. He was interviewed by multiple news sources, including the Big Ten Network, the day he canceled, and then he was silent for a week while all these players and parents wanted answers, and coaches and ADs, they wanted answers, and he was not transparent at all. So I don't want to say repeatedly. But Kevin Warren has said, well, this is about the health and safety of our student-athletes. He hasn't given specific data. He hasn't quoted specific medical experts. He said it's uncertain, and we're about the safety of the student-athletes. Here's why I think Kevin Warren is lying through his teeth. Well, a couple of reasons, actually. A, this is about liability, okay? Now, I know, you know, I've heard from other sources that have said, well, they, you know, players would not be able to sue even if they died. The families wouldn't be able to, which they're not going to, by the way. But even if they died, the parents would not, families wouldn't be able to sue because they would have to prove that they, you know, transmitted the virus while playing football or on campus, and that's just too hard to do. I don't believe that. I think that if there's a will, there's a way as far as litigation, especially when you're talking this much money and this big of a platform that these parents would have with an amateur athlete playing at a Division I level. So I don't buy into that. I think it's about liability. The argument that, you know, you hear these people that say, well, how can you even think about playing sports when we have a pandemic and this virus going on? You know, they act holier than thou in that you would even consider playing. You know, you're just a rotten individual if you would even think about putting these kids in harm's way. Let me give you a newsflash. This is not putting the kids in any more harm's way than they're being put in their daily life. Alex, in your estimation, are 18 to 24-year-olds going to go home because college football just got canceled? Are they going to go home in quarantine? Are they going to sit in their basement and sing Kumbaya and wait until April when we finally have a vaccine widely distributed? Is that what they're going to do?
No, I think in a previous podcast I said, you know, the health of the student-athletes, I don't think can, in anyone's right mind, be the main motivating factor for canceling or, you know, suspending a season. It just doesn't make sense. The data just does not back up the fact that these kids are going to have problems. And like you're talking about, you know, they're going to be just as much in harm's way as far as catching this virus from their typical college lives, especially, you know, athletes. They're going to be partying and doing whatever.
Well, and guess what? They're gonna if they're not partying, if they're not on campus, which I find it hilarious that you've got tons of Big Ten institutions that the Big Ten, the NCAA and the Big Ten, and I don't know how much authority they have over schools being on campus, but I don't think they have probably much of any. But these kids, a lot of these schools are on campus. Michigan State just sent their kids home and they're going virtual. But a lot of these Big Ten institutions are still on campus. So why are you on campus but not able to play football? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And you're sending a lot of these kids who, you know, we've talked about Iowa's black athletes. It's not just Iowa. It's Ohio State, Michigan State. It's not just black athletes. But you think of a lot of the black athletes, unfortunately, have come from the inner city. And they've gotten away from gun violence. They've gotten away from oppression. and they're going back to their parents, to their grandparents, and they're going to these inner cities where the virus is spreading, okay, and where they don't have the protection of the medical experts with these football institutions. They don't have the testing that these institutions had already implemented. And you're going to tell me that you think it's safer for these kids to go home, whether that be to the inner city or the rurals, I don't care where you're going, you think it's safer for them to go home than to be tested once or twice a week, to be monitored around the clock, put into quarantine if they catch it, and again, surrounded by some of the best medical experts. The Big Ten has some of the best medical experts. You talk about University of Michigan. You talk about University of Iowa. You think it's safer. You're telling me it's safer for them to go live their normal 18 to 24-year-old lives away from that blanket of safety than for them to be there wearing face shields, not trans. This virus is not trans. Let's be honest. We figured out a lot about this virus over the past few months. It primarily travels through the air. It can travel through surfaces, but we're finding more and more that the transmission rates are much lower, and the severity of said transmission rates are much less severe. And so if you're wearing – I'm convinced that if these players are wearing face shields like they're going to in the NFL and like I think they're going to in these other conferences if they happen, you're telling me that they're not safer in that environment? And I've also come to the conclusion that, look, Kirk Ferentz, Ken O'Keefe, Phil Parker, yeah, these are some older coaches. Coaches can social distance. They can. Not saying it's easy. None of this is easy. It's not easy either way. None of this is going to – there's no magical formula here that's going to fix all of this and make a perfect scenario. But the coaches can social distance. They can wear masks as they're coaching. They've got headsets on. Okay. And again, even if the players were transmitting it as they were playing football, let me give you a statistic from a cardiologist up at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, which I think most people say is one of the most prestigious of hospitals and clinics in the world, not just the country, but in the world. According to Mayo Clinic cardiologist Michael Ackerman, who the Big 12, by the way, has really leaned on, which I find ironic that the Big 12 is leaning on the Mayo Clinic, which is in Minnesota, but yet Big Ten institutes surrounding the Mayo Clinic have opted not to lean on the Mayo Clinic. Michael Ackerman says, and I quote, "It would be a scientific foul," end quote, to conclude that COVID-19 leads to myocarditis and 18 to 24-year-old athletes. Again, a scientific foul to conclude that. As a further illustration, as far as it relates to is football going to be a spreader of the virus, we're not even talking about players going to develop myocarditis or die of this or even show symptoms, but just the spread of this virus. Oklahoma, OU, who is playing this year because they're in the Big 12. They're in a conference that actually has thought this through and developed a plan. Oklahoma had zero positive cases before sending their players home for about a week's time. The players returned with 9 positives. 9 positives. What does that tell you, Alex?
That they're going to be getting this no matter what, regardless of where they're at.
Exactly. And the data we have right now, I've not read a single piece of data that indicates any spread through football. I'm not saying it's not going to spread. It probably will to a degree. But I haven't seen any overwhelming data that says that it's spreading because of football. It's definitely going to spread because kids are being kids. That, we know that. But again, that's got nothing to do with college football. That has nothing to do with football. By the way, ER visits for COVID-19 symptoms are down to 1.8% nationally, which means 98.2% of emergency room visits across the country are for something non-COVID-19 related. This was back on the 16th of August, according to the Columbus Dispatch. COVID-19 cases in Ohio had dropped by nearly half. The heart of the Big Ten country, Ohio. Scientists are starting, this is according to the New York Times, who, by the way, has been very pro against a lot of these things that we're advocating for. Scientists, well, not we are advocating for, but sports in general. Scientists are starting to see encouraging signs of strong, lasting immunity, even in people who developed only mild symptoms of COVID-19, according to a flurry of new studies. We could go on and on here. I think it's pretty clear that this is another. I'll just share one more piece of data with you that I found rather interesting and startling, really, after given the decision of the Big Ten. This is according to freeop.org. The estimated relative risk of death from influenza or pneumonia versus COVID-19, assuming 150,000 total COVID-19 deaths. Again, this is, let me see here, 150 total deaths, right? So, let me see, I'm not reading this correctly now. I had it here and I lost it. Here it is. Okay. Again, this is influenza or pneumonia. For people under 1 year, 1 year of age, people who develop influenza or pneumonia are actually at a much greater risk of dying from the common flu or pneumonia than COVID-19. 1 to 4 years old, it goes up by quite a bit. It's still greater in 5 to 14-year-olds, and it's still greater in 15 to 24-year-olds. Now, once you hit that 24-year or 25-year-old mark, it begins to go in the opposite direction. You have a much greater – not a much greater risk. You have a relatively greater risk of dying from COVID-19. And again, this isn't. These are just some pieces of data. I know that I mentioned this earlier, but new cases per day in the state of Florida – August 15th, just a few days ago, had the lowest number of new cases since June 2017. So the curve has come back down quite a bit in Florida. And we also did not see the number of hospitalizations and deaths stemming from the Florida outbreak, which was much, as far as new cases, much higher than the tri-state area in New York and New Jersey, that area. So, Alex, given all that data that we just ran through, do you believe that college football could be played safely and played safely to a point where you're comfortable about playing college football?
Well, I think, you know, we accept a level of risk in everything, and this has been a pretty hot button issue with schools reopening. But the fact of the matter is, and like some of the stats you're reading, is this virus is not. It doesn't act the same as a flu. A flu tends to affect old people, obviously, and younger people, who, especially very young kids. And this virus is not doing that. It's basically weighted toward the older you get, the worse it is for you. And like you said, you know, these younger kids and even up to college age are really at little to no risk. I mean, it's hard to say. I don't want to say something that's, you know, incorrect, but little to no more risk than the standard types of things that we accept, like the flu, the seasonal flu. So as far as, you know, student athlete safety, you factor in the fact that these guys are in excellent condition. I've been kind of just keeping an eye on athletes that have gotten COVID, and especially pro athletes. And you don't tend to see, I can't remember any that have gotten any types of, barely even getting symptoms, especially NBA players. I can't think of any symptoms that these guys have gotten other than loss of taste, you know, mild malaise, that type of thing. I think Jimmy Butler maybe had, he said he was symptomatic, but I hadn't heard much more beyond that. But regardless, these guys being in excellent cardiovascular and respiratory health combined with their age, I'm talking about collegiate athletes, they're really at a very low risk. And it's, to me, is not any worse than the standard flu, except for the fact that it's going to be in addition to that. So you could have, you know, a complication. Now you have cold, flu, and COVID at the same time, you know, these viruses circulating. And there's actually some data out of Australia that's suggesting that this might not be a very bad flu year. And they're not sure why. Maybe it's because of the distancing measures. But so far, you know, because Australia's where we get our vaccine from, because they have their flu season during their winter, which is our summer. So we get all of our data from them. And this summer has been a very mild flu season for them. So that was a concern a couple months ago for a lot of people about having both of those at once. But overall, you know, I think if somebody like Kevin Warren saying that student athlete safety is the motivating factor for making a decision, he's either lying or he's probably misinformed or maybe a little bit overly reactive to the possibility of having serious outcomes for student athletes. I don't personally think it's a big enough risk to.
Well, you don't think it's because of litigation? Because I get tired of hearing people, and people do. They act like this is not a political issue. I think it is underlying, unfortunately, with the people who are making decisions. But this is not a political issue. Okay. When I say that I believe that students, from everything I've read and heard, I believe that students are at just as much risk or maybe even greater risk away from football as playing football, I mean that. That's got nothing to do with politics. That's just what I've ascertained. And again, we've heard this from the SEC. We've heard it from the ACC, the Big 12. We mentioned they're relying on Mayo Clinic and the cardiology department. I believe that the student athletes are probably at a greater risk away, because the fact of the matter is they're not going to quarantine. They're not going to isolate. They're going to spend time. They're going to be 18 to 24 year olds. They're going to contract the virus. They're going to give it to grandma. They're going to give it to papa and their friends. They're not going to isolate. So to sit here and be naive and say, well, we're doing this for the safety of athletes, give me a break. Give me a break. And I think athletes' parents have a right to be upset about this, because it's not just you're not only are, of course, the financial ramifications for the schools, for the local communities, and for the players missing out on potential opportunities to impress NFL scouts, it's also destroying these kids mentally. I mean, these kids, you know, whether it's right or wrong, have given their life to football. And now you're ripping it away from them, and you're going to send them back again to the inner city with some where there's gun violence. There's already, you know, we know that in the U.S., the second highest cause of death between 18 to 24-year-old people is suicide. And you're going to send them back, rip that away from them, and tell them, no, you can't do this. You have to go home and, you know, not be with your teammates, not be in that destructive environment. I just Kevin Warren ought to be fired, and I don't normally say that on the show as far as somebody who should be fired. I don't even know that I said that about Chris Doyle when accusations came down on him. Kevin Warren needs to be fired. He's handled this terribly. He's botched the public relations side of things. He's not been fair to parents, not been fair to players. Players should have had a say in this. The fact that they released a schedule, and then 3 days later we were getting rumblings that Kevin Warren wanted a spring season and somehow got a decent number, apparently enough to pass a vote, which we've heard there was actually a vote. We don't know that for certain, but we've heard from some sources that there was a vote, although others have been indifferent about that subject. It just doesn't make sense. He's been an absolute disgrace to the conference, and I hate to say that, but I think the tipping point for me is the fact that his son Powers Warren. His son is, by the way, is named Powers. His son is practicing right now and is going to play for Mississippi State. Your reaction?
Well, I should be clear. I don't necessarily think that their decision to suspend the season is wrong, but I do think that their reasons for the reasons they're giving are pretty much bogus. I'm not sure that if we look back in 6 months that we'll look back and say, well, that was definitely the wrong decision to suspend the season. But under the guise of student athlete safety, you know, I don't think anyone is buying that who's, you know, in the know as far as the data on this virus. I just don't, to me, that seems like you're talking about politically correct, you know, speech, talking in a way that's politically correct, just basically saying what people want to hear. I think that sounds good. It sounds responsible. You're talking about the kids' safety, but I don't think that's a valid
the data does not back that up. The data does not back that up. The kids are going to get it just as much, if not more, away from these campuses. Am I wrong on that?
I mean, that definitely could be, I think.
I mean, no, I shouldn't say away from football. If they're partying on campus, that's a different story. But again, it's come back to planning. It comes back to the fact that the Big Ten never had a good plan, ever. They never had a good plan. The universities had good plans in place. Ohio State, Penn State, even Nebraska, Iowa, they've all said, we were confident with our plans. The players were obviously confident with our plans. This hashtag we want to play movement has been a thing for the last couple of weeks. This is not about player safety. This is about they never had a plan because I don't believe they ever intended to play. I have no reason to think they intended to play. Who releases a 10-game schedule and then 3 days later decides, nah, we're gonna just cancel it?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think that if they gave more logical reasons for why they're suspending the season, a couple of which would be, one, the safety of staff and coaches and whatnot, these older people who are in that risk age groups, and two, the fact that once you have cases, you have to have those players sit out, and that, you know, if we get a buildup of a lot of players sitting out, it's gonna be a total mess with the season. I mean, those are valid reasons, I think, to consider suspending a season. But as far as the player safety and talking about myocarditis, I haven't heard any experts talking about myocarditis in relation to COVID-19. I know that it's obviously affecting people differently, and the flu, like you said, does this to an extent. It can actually infect different areas of the body other than just upper and lower respiratory system. But I haven't heard anyone talking about myocarditis as a major risk factor for COVID-19.
And I think
serious health development as a result of it.
The most valid reason I can think of, and it's not a, it's, I disagree with you on the coaches thing. I don't think that's the most valid reason. I believe the most valid reason is what you said at the end, contact tracing. If you're going to contact trace everybody, and all these student athletes are tackling each other, if one person gets it, how many people have to sit out? I get that. And Kirk Ferentz brought that up this past week. But that's not one of the reasons that's not one of the primary reasons the Big Ten office gave. And it also disagrees with the evidence that Duke has brought forth, the Mayo Clinic has brought forth with the Big 12, the SEC, their medical experts aren't agreeing with this. So, again, how can you look at medical advice? What does the Big Ten know that all these other schools don't? What pushed them over the edge, and yet these other three conferences are saying, no, we're comfortable with this. We believe the student-athletes are safer here, giving it a shot. Now, maybe we won't finish the whole – maybe we'll have to, you know – maybe a couple games will have to be suspended. I mean, the Big Ten was supposed to have made – they made this 10-game conference schedule. They were supposed to start in early September. They didn't even bother delaying it by 3 weeks. They didn't even bother delaying it until September 26th, which is when a lot of conferences are starting. I mean, why not delay it and then see what happens? What is the reasoning?
Yeah, I'm not sure as far as what their reasoning is. I'm not sure if they're more uninformed as far as the safety, you know, the data about the safety of people in that age group, or
how can you possibly
just trying to say
uninformed
sounds rosy.
They've had 5 months to figure this out. How can you possibly claim to be uninformed?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if that's the case. It's probably more likely that they're, you know, trying to say what sounds good, which is, you know, the safety of students, but I don't think that's a valid. I mean, I'm not going to say it's not a valid concern. I don't think it's valid enough to base the entire decision of canceling a season on it's just not a big enough risk. I don't.
As we've learned, the virus is gonna spread no matter where you're at. Again, if it's contact tracing and you're worried about the logistics of it, that's a valid concern. But are you really going to shut down the season in early August because you're concerned about how you're going to contact trace? And that's not helping the safety. That's not the reasons Kevin Warren gave in his interview. So, listen, again, it's been a PR nightmare for the Big Ten. I think Kevin Warren ought to be fired. I liked Kevin Warren back in March, even when they canceled the NCAA tournament. I thought he was very professional. I thought he's been he's been a train wreck. Would you agree with that? Do you believe that Kevin Warren should lose his job over how he's handled this?
I wouldn't go that far, I guess, but I do think that he definitely doesn't seem he's not communicating well at all. I mean, it was hard for me to get
at all.
That's what I mean. Is like, you know, we were without power for 9 days, and like you said, that decision came down right at the beginning of the storm. And I thought, well, maybe I'm just not hearing about this much because of I'm not connected on social media. But it turns out that him in particular, you know, they weren't really saying much about it anyway, so I didn't miss anything, you know, being without social media and news and all that stuff. So that's, to me, his biggest downfall is you can't just drop a bombshell like that and then, you know what, you wait a week to answer questions or back it up. It's just going to make people, you know, get riled up, and they have that whole time of getting riled up, and now you're going to see, you know, protests. Like, we haven't had enough protests this year. It's not even related to what the other ones were. We're going to have more protesting by parents and students. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So I think he could have avoided that if he'd been more transparent, but, you know, being transparent, maybe it's good for him if he knows that his reason given for suspending the season wasn't totally valid or based on data. Maybe being transparent isn't a great strategy for him, because it would be obvious that, you know, he was either uninformed or, you know, basically giving a faulty reason for canceling. So
explain to me how his son is planning on playing at Mississippi State.
I didn't know about that. It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, explain it to me. How can he sit there as the commissioner and say it's not safe for student athletes to play, but yet his son's down there practicing, getting ready to play, has not opted out, and is not planning on opting out?
I mean, I can't imagine any way that reason is really the most valid reason. I'm not saying it's not at all valid, but to base the whole decision on that, and then you have your
kid.
What's
he thinking? What's he thinking? Does he not think people are going to know that his son's playing?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that just doesn't.
You'd think that'd be a pretty big elephant in the room.
Avoid. And his response, basically, when he was asked this week, finally got a response from him. Let me read it here. Nicole Auerbach, I believe she's at the Big Ten Network or of Stadium. I can't remember. I know she at least used to work for Big Ten Network, but she was asked, or she asked Kevin Warren about his son playing, and he said, and I quote, "As a family, we've had many difficult decisions regarding this issue, but the decisions we make in the Big Ten Conference, we have to look at them at a micro level. We need to focus on what's right for our nearly 10,000 student athletes at 14 institutions." How does that answer the question? He doesn't answer questions. He does not answer questions. He gives response that he views as politically correct so that he can avoid questions, just like every politician always does.
I'm not sure how much, you know, power he has exactly, but he's not painting himself in a good light by, you know, if he truly didn't have much pull in this whole situation, I mean, I would think it would be better for him to be more open about, you know, the president's voted on this. It's a whole decision by more than just him, and obviously he did, but it took him over a week to kind of say that. And it didn't seem like a very, I don't know. He's just not communicating well with anybody, and it's just not painting him in a good light. And I think a lot of fans are not not happy with him. I think maybe even if he made the same decision, if they made the same decision, if he had been better about it, or maybe if he starts being better about communication now, that, you know, things could be better for him, at least a little bit easier. But he's just not, he's just not being very transparent about the whole situation. So it's definitely strange.
And again, if we go back to, you know, this is a point we haven't even discussed. We go back to the issue of, is it about player safety? If it was about player safety, why does it seem like the majority of Big Ten parents are advocating to play? You're telling me the parents don't care about their kids' safety?
Yeah, like I said,
you're
I don't
telling
think
me Kevin Warren cares more about the safety than their own parents? Give me a break. And what does he know that the parents don't know? Again, it doesn't. It all pans down to he has screwed the pooch. Either way you look at it, any you can crunch the numbers, you can look at this, any whatever way you look at this, he has screwed the pooch. He's either not been transparent, talking to the parents, talking to the players, talking to the coaches and athletic directors, and filling them in on information that is medical data that proves that there should not be a college football season. And he's also not shared that with other conferences, because other conferences have basically said, hey, we'd love to know if the Big Ten you know, knows that we don't know. Or he's not basing it off any of that, and he's got ulterior motives, a.k.a. litigation fears. And that's really the only one I come back to. That's the only real one that I come back to. And again, you're right. If he really was a competent commissioner, he would tell people, hey, these presidents voted. He won't say who voted which way. You've got 14 institutions, and he won't say. Think about how much flack he's under for this. If he were to say, look, we had 10 schools that voted yes to canceling, 4 schools to vote no, okay, that's still the majority was for yes for canceling, and these are the schools that did it, wouldn't the onus fall back on those schools?
Well, I think even if he came out and said
that, it would fall back
on
the presidents. The presidents would be the one under fire.
Yeah, I mean, I think he could still avoid some of that if he just was without naming which schools or which.
Why not name them? Why not name them? Why aren't we naming them? Why do we have to? Why do we have to not? I know, but why do we? Why can't we name them? I mean, why can't we be transparent about that? What is so freaking confidential about which way these presidents voted?
They may have all agreed on that. You know, the presidents don't want that disclosed. But even if you just came out and said we're more transparent about the vote and how that all went down without naming names, I think it still would be better than what he's done.
By the way, things are looking good for college basketball. People are saying, well, you're not going to have college football. You're probably not going to have college basketball. Dan Gavitt, the good news about college basketball, as opposed to college football, which has no leadership at all, because the NCAA does not govern what happens except when people make violations and rule problems and they have to approve waivers and that kind of junk. The NCAA really doesn't have much say as far as what goes on in college football, but they do with college basketball. And the good news is Mark Emmert's not involved. He is involved, but Dan Gavitt is the voice of college basketball that really is going to be taking the lead on things. And what I've heard, there's multiple scenarios that Dan Gavitt and the NCAA are working through. And I think many people think that the season's probably not going to start until January, and it'll be pushed back from the end of November to the beginning of January. And this is my favorite scenario. There's many scenarios that are being tossed around out there. We should hear something by mid-September. Again, it sounds like they've actually got plans, and they've got, you know, discussions that are specific. And again, they've been pretty transparent about what these discussions are, so you can research those. We're not going to go over each individual scenario or option. We can maybe do that on a different show. But one of the options that I really found interesting, Alex, is the idea of, and I'm not sure that virus is going to be any better in January, but even if it's not, starting January 1st and basically playing, you can't put all these kids in a bubble, and they don't want to do that. But you can kind of do that to a degree with some tournaments. You could have basically maybe 2 big tournaments within your conference. You could play a 26-game conference schedule where you basically have, you know, you play each of the other 13 teams twice, which currently they play, what, 20-game conference schedule? You could play a 26-game conference schedule. I think you could add in like one of those early season tournament games round robin style where you play everybody, and you could get your almost 26 games regular season in and end the season in May like we wanted last year with May Madness. You could have May Madness 2021. But you basically would send schools to a site and a venue and put them up for 4 or 5 days and have them play every couple of days, and get each team could get like 3 or 4 games in.
It should be May Mayhem instead of March Madness.
Yeah, you could do that. May Mayhem. Yeah. But that's sort of the direction some of these discussions are going from everything I've heard. Your thoughts on college basketball? It just seems like with the leadership at the top with college basketball, and then the just logistics of it with fewer players and the ability to play games kind of like the NBA every other day, there's ways they can, especially when they're on break and they're not in school, they can maybe have, take these kids for a week or something and play in a controlled environment, not in a bubble, but in a more controlled environment, and get maybe it's a 20 game, maybe it's not 26 game, but a 20 game season in. And then definitely, I think you could definitely have some sort of a bubble for the NCAA tournament, whether that be March, April, or May.
Yeah. I mean, I'm optimistic about college basketball. I really hope that something happens, that we have some developments with the whole pandemic situation in this country, at least by January. I'm hopeful for that. I still think there's a chance that we could, it's hard to say, but that we could get to more of a herd immunity in areas that have been hit by then. Even though that doesn't mean the whole country as a whole, but I think that could slow the virus down enough that could make a real impact on it. But yeah, I mean, as far as a bubble, I don't know how NCAA would deal with that. I really am thankful for the NBA and how they've handled the situation. They've pretty much from the start have been the shining example that, even when they shut down early, a lot of people were mad, but they've been kind of the front runners in a lot of this. And I think the NFL is going to learn a lot from what they've done with the bubble. I'm not sure how that will translate to NCAA, but they, the NBA is a great experiment in the way they're handling it, and they're going to see what works and what doesn't, which mostly seems to be working right now. So I think the NCAA will be able to formulate a way to do that much better than they can hope for with football, in the next month or two. By January, I think they'll definitely have a better, I think we as a whole, as a country and world, are going to have a better idea of how to manage this type of situation when it comes to sports. So I am more optimistic about college basketball.
If you were told right now, or maybe say in July, given the circumstances where the virus was, if you were told, or even now, hey, we're not going to play football in the fall, we're not going to play football in the spring, but you are guaranteed a full college basketball season, would you take that?
as opposed to
running the risk of getting of not getting either, or maybe getting both, or getting part of one, part of the other, or no football and just part of basketball. If you were guaranteed you're not going to get football, but you are going to get basketball this season, a full season, and you're going to have very limited interruptions, would you take that?
Well, from purely selfish standpoint, being an Iowa fan, obviously the basketball team has probably the best, most stacked
right.
team
exactly
time, or at least in my lifetime. But it's not to say that the football team doesn't have a pretty good outlook. I mean, they have more talent at skill positions than I've ever seen in my life by far. But they do have some pretty big gaping holes that we don't know if they'll be able to fill. So there's obviously more optimism around the basketball season. That's a tough question, though. I don't know if I could honestly answer that. I mean, I hate to think the idea of losing a whole football season. I'm being optimistic. I'd hope that we could have both, but if I had to choose one, I don't know.
A lot of skeptics don't think we're playing football in the fall. They think that's just the Big Ten's way of putting off that final decision, and that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 will ultimately decide not to play and that it doesn't sound like they have much of a plan. Now, I think over this past week, the parents and players being so
Fall.
No, spring. Spring/winter. I do think over the past week with these parents, coaches, and players being so vocal and fans being so vocal, we saw, if you read the statement from Commissioner Warren yesterday, it sounds like the conference is looking at a plan or outline that Coach James Franklin and Coach Ryan Day of Penn State and Ohio State respectively put together, and that is to start basically the first week of January. And playing, it sounds like they would probably play the at least the front half of their schedule in indoor stadiums. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I understand the mindset, you know, of somebody who's thinking, well, they're just pushing it back so they can get out of doing it completely. I don't know how much I agree with that because, you know, especially if we're canceling the season prematurely like the Big Ten has, what I would be more worried about is if we played like some kind of a half season and then it gets broken up and then that's used as the excuse. Oh, well, we already had a half season. What are we going to restart season where it ended? We're going to restart completely. And then that's their excuse for getting rid of the entire football season in the spring. That's more what I would be worried about. I think that's probably less likely if we don't play at all this fall. So I don't know. I'm not really one way or another as far as that mindset goes.
What are your thoughts about playing in January though?
I mean, January, let's be honest, as far as this virus goes, January is very optimistic. Nobody wants to hear that, but it is. as far as how that would be, you know, I think it'd be fine for, it would be nasty weather. I mean, for Iowa, obviously, and all these Big Ten teams, not that they don't play in nasty weather in December, but when, if you started in January, you got 2 months of total crap weather. And it's, you know, December, a little bit of that.
Again, but, they're not playing, we're talking about playing indoors.
Well, how would that work though?
Apparently, they would be playing the majority of the games in Detroit, where there's a dome, and Minneapolis, where there's a dome, and Indianapolis. That's what I've heard.
Well, I mean,
I think, you know what, I they said, well, all these pro football domes, why do you got to play in a pro football dome? There's not going to be fans. Play at the Unidome. I'd say play at the Unidome. Why couldn't the Big Ten play? Why couldn't they play at the Unidome?
It's interesting.
Give me one reason why they could play, and that would be great for you and I because they'd get some revenue.
Well, football is a different deal as far as if you're talking about kind of a bubble situation because the games are so much more spaced out. It's a different set of challenges, I think. But yeah, I don't see why, you know, the NBA, because they have the money that they do, they're able to set up this whole situation indoors with a virtual crowd. I don't see what that would look like. I guess if you're talking by then, maybe you're assuming that you could have crowds. I don't know.
January, you're not having crowds in January, and you're not putting them indoors either.
I don't think so, but you know that's the problem with talking about January is up in these northern states, are you going to have kids out in negative 20 degree weather? I mean,
And the conspiracy theorist in me on this whole situation says this, and that is that the Big Ten might be agreeing to try to play in January, one, to appease the coaches who have advocated that so that the players, the big-time players, won't opt out and just say, hey, we want to be in the draft, and if we start in March, it's going to be too late. If we start in February, it's going to be too late, and that way they can finish early enough to participate in the combine, and the draft may not have to be moved back. But the other conspiracy theorist part of me in this whole situation thinks, you know, if they appease these coaches and say, yeah, we'll try to play in January, and then December rolls around and it's not any better, they can just scratch the whole season. They can say, well, we tried in the spring, but it's just not better. But see, if it's in March, there may be more, questionable. It may be more questionable whether it's you know what I'm saying? It may be better to a point where it's less obvious that they have to cancel.
Yeah. I mean, I do think things will change, you know, by, say, December enough. I think that we probably maybe can predict the future a little bit. I think we probably will be able to. So for them to cancel.
So you're not buying the fact that it's going to be worse in the winter and pairing that with flu season?
I don't see the
why
season.
Why has flu season never been a problem? Why has it never been a problem for the NBA and college basketball? If it's so bad, if the flu season is so bad for viruses, why is the flu, which we just talked about how the flu affects younger people more, why hasn't that been an issue for college basketball, which is always played in the winter months?
Well, I mean, we get players out for the flu, but it's just it's a you know, pretty small problem. And obviously, they almost never have severe outcomes, and the transmission is not as easy, I guess. It's more droplet-related, whereas COVID is more aerosol and droplet. So it is a little bit of a different beast. But like I said, you know, we accept different levels of risk for all kinds of things. Like with school, the flu is possibly even more deadly. I say possibly. It's probably pretty close, but possibly more deadly to kids, especially grade school kids, than COVID is. It's at least very similar. And, you know, we don't stop school for that type of thing. So it's hard, you know, it's hard to say you're basically accepting the risk of every year you're going to have kids die, which is the blunt truth of it from the flu. But that's what we do. You know, that's what we do as a society. We continue on
with
school.
That's life. That's just life, right? You know, with viruses.
You know, what I think is funny about this whole situation is it's opened a lot of people's eyes to that. Whereas, you know, in the past, if you didn't have a family member or somebody you knew who had a really bad outcome from the flu, it turned into pneumonia, that type of thing, you know, you kind of assumed that it was, you didn't really think about it. People were very lackadaisical about coming to work sick, coming around in gathering sick. You know, there's very few people, and the people that acted like everyone is acting now were labeled germaphobes, essentially. And now, I don't think anything is going to go back to normal ever for as far as that goes. Maybe it'll take decades, but people are going to be a lot more careful about stuff like the flu, whereas I don't think they were aware of how many deaths, you know, there were, I think last year, 30 to 40,000 deaths in this country from the flu. People they don't tend to be as aware of that as maybe they should be. So, you know, this whole situation with accepting risk, a lot of people are kind of naive to the fact that we do that anyways every year. And this is why, you know, following the data is so important. You have to make decisions that are based in reality and not based in, you know, hypothetical nonsense. And I think that's kind of, unfortunately, at least what the Big Ten has given for a reason. But I do think that by, you know, December, we should have an idea of how to deal with this type of thing. We'll have had full NBA playoffs anyway, probably a full NFL season, I think. And I think the virus situation is going to be different. I'm sure, I think it's down a lot. What was that?
As a Big Ten commissioner, as a conference, as these institutions, you better hope and pray, and as a fan and players even, you better hope and pray that the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 do not play. You better hope they're, because if they all can pull off a successful season this fall, what's that going to say to recruits? What's that going to say to, I mean, just everybody? I mean, what's that going to do to the Big 10?
Yeah, it won't be a good look. And I think that if I had to predict, I think that'll happen to an extent. But I think, you know, I've said before on the podcast with Krukos and you that it'll probably get shut down anyways. But people are going to be really pissed off for sure for a while. If everyone ends up getting shut down, I think, you know, nobody's going to care that the Big Ten stopped it early. In fact, they might look at that as more of a, you know, better decision. But I think people are going to be pissed off no matter what. but if somehow the season was to complete, I'm not sure what that would look like as far as how many players are going to be out. They're going to have to be quarantined for, 10 days. And, you know, you get a star player out. How much does that affect the whole team dynamic, especially in football? If it's something like a quarterback goes out, how much of an asterisk is there going to be next to a national championship or, you know, Rose Bowl, that type of thing? I'm not sure what that would look like, but yeah, if somehow they pull it off, it won't be like the Big Ten. There's going to be some people getting their heads chopped as far as their jobs go, I think. But I don't think that'll happen. But people are going to be pretty unhappy for a while, for sure.
The only way Kevin Warren survives this all, I think, from a PR standpoint, perhaps even his job, his occupation, is if everybody else shuts down and says, hey, we're going to play in the spring, and the Big Ten has already put into place, Big Ten and Pac-12 have already put into place their schedule, and they say, hey, join us, we're going to play in January, and then it gets pulled off to perfection, and I think that's probably not going to happen. But if that were to happen and all these conferences join in and they have national championships and play in the spring, I think that's how the Big Ten survives this. Otherwise, I think this is going to be really, really harmful for the Big Ten, perhaps for, well, I don't know how long this is going to affect the Big Ten. But if they don't end up playing this year and three other conferences do, it's not going to help them competitively at all.
Well, that was my first thought is when this decision got handed down, I felt like the Big Ten is probably thinking that other conferences are going to follow suit, you know, in the next, you would think, in a timely manner. And so far that hasn't happened. And I'm just wondering if that maybe is explains some of their silence and their reasons given. You know, maybe they were under the impression that other conferences were going to follow suit. I don't know. I think that would help explain a little bit of the PR situation. You know, it doesn't sound to me like that was the case, but you have to think that that had a factor. It doesn't really make that much sense the way they've handled it without that being a factor. So I'm not sure what to make of it.
Would you be okay with an 8-game schedule, an 8-game season that starts in January, and then a Big Ten championship game, which would be a 9th game, and then a Pac-12 versus Big Ten championship game?
Pac-12 versus Big Ten championship
game. What else is there? That's what it would be. That is what it would be, unless you're going to do a 4-team playoff with the two best teams from each conference. That's what it's going to be. And you're probably not going to do that because they don't want to have more than 9 or 10 games tops this year, because then you're talking about impeding on the health and safety of the kids in the fall, which we haven't even talked about. Can you really pull off two seasons in one calendar year?
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem is when you get into when things get dicey and they get all messy and split up like that, how much is any of it really worth? And, you know, that's why I do, in my mind, I like the idea of a spring season. That's obviously contingent on a lot of factors, but as a selfish fan, I like the idea of that because I just don't see the season in this fall. If, let's say, the Big Ten were playing, I just have a bad feeling it's going to get cut short and it's just going to be an ugly mess, or basically going to lose the season and not get a spring season because we played. That was my bigger worry. But if the other conferences are going to play, it's really going to throw a wrench in the works, because let's say they finish out, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 games. Let's just say they do, and the Big Ten didn't play, Pac-12 didn't play. Are those other conferences, SEC, are they going to play what? Another season in the spring? Are they going to play a half season? How is that going to translate? Are the records, they just going to carry them over from the fall? It's going to be really, really messy.
Well, that's okay. I think that would be okay from the perspective of, yeah, I mean, there's logistics that would have to occur. I've not heard of that hypothetical of if the seasons get cut short, that they would finish them in the spring. I don't know that that's possible. I mean, I don't know how you could do that.
What I'd be more worried about is losing the whole season based on that, you know, getting cut short. It seems more likely to me, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. I actually kind of hope, just out of morbid curiosity, I hope that some conferences play and some don't, just so I can see what happens. You know, being totally impartial and just wanting to see what happens, I kind of am curious
how that'd play out. Hoping from a Big Ten fan perspective that everybody gets shut down, and that way right. We can see a consensus season, maybe see a consensus season, which I know some people don't think is going to happen, but maybe see that in January. And January is not that far. Let's be honest.
Quick.
What?
Or maybe you hope that it gets shut down quick. If these other conferences do play, that maybe you have outbreaks really quickly and they get a couple games in, and you know, maybe that's enough to say, oh, we didn't really play this fall, so we're going to have a spring season. I don't know.
If that happened, the Big Ten would look really good.
Right.
I mean, not really good. I think Kevin Warren, like I said, Kevin Warren screwed the pooch no matter what. I know people don't like that term, but that's the bottom line. He's messed this thing up from a PR standpoint no matter what happens, but he could save face if that scenario were to play out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to look good regardless just because of how he's handled it, but as I think there's a very good possibility the Big Ten looks good in 6 months as far as how they handle it. I think it could go either way, but I think there's a pretty good possibility that happens, so... as far as his job goes, I'm not sure. I don't know that, like you were talking about, if these other conferences are able to pretty much complete seasons, his head's going to be on a platter, I think, in the minds of a lot of fans anyway, because I just don't see there's going to be so much. Think of how big of a deal football is. And, you know, the Big Ten fans are rabid. Imagine if this happened down south. You're talking Alabama fans and they canceled the season. That's got to have an effect. That's got to be a factor as to why they haven't. You know, imagine if you took that away from them and then say we're up here playing football while they're down there doing nothing.
Yeah, I get that. But again, I go back to the ACC. They're not a powerful football conference, you know, besides Clemson. And you've got health experts at Duke that are saying it's safe to play. So, I mean, I don't think Duke fans are going to be pounding down the doors if they don't play football. But anyways, the other question in all this is, will there be players that opt out? I mean, definitely there's going to be players, even if they do get to play in January, and they, you know, some players are going to say it's not worth the risk of playing two seasons in 1 year. Some players are going to say it's not worth the risk. You know, I'm a senior and I'm going to go to the NFL, you know, hopefully get drafted in April. I'm not going to risk my body this close to the draft. My question comes back to, have we seen Alaric Jackson? Have we seen Amir Smith-Marset, Brandon Smith, Coy Cronk? Well, we never even saw Coy Cronk in an Iowa uniform. Have we seen those guys for the last time? And that's my big question. Alex, do you believe, and I think the biggest candidates of those four would be probably Alaric Jackson and Amir Smith-Marset, that we potentially have seen them for the final time?
I mean, to me, I don't think so. Obviously, I don't want that, but I honestly don't think we have in some way, shape, or form. You know, as far as backing up the spring season to suit the NFL draft, I think the NFL draft and the combine, that stuff, you know, that's going to take a back seat to the college season.
That's the NFL. They're going to have to agree to push that thing back.
Yeah, I think they will. I don't see that being any kind of a determining factor. If stuff gets kind of crammed together next year, it's just the way it goes. You know, this is an unprecedented situation. If the NBA was that rigid, we wouldn't have any basketball right now. We wouldn't have any sports. You know, we would be totally without athletic entertainment. So I think that probably will get moved around. I don't think that's going to be as big of a hindrance on scheduling for next spring.
But you're playing so close to the draft that if somebody tears their ACL, they're not going to have time to recover, you know, or maybe not even an ACL tear. They're not going to have time to recover before a combine if the combine's less than a month after the season ends.
Right. I mean, it's definitely has its challenges. It's just not, there's no way to have your cake and eat it too with this situation. But I think, you know, certain things are going to have to take a back seat. And I don't think the whole season is going to be, you know, the whole college season is going to be that. I think that, you know, that'll probably happen. Some kids will have had things happen that normally maybe wouldn't affect their draft stock as much. And maybe it will this next year, but I don't think you reschedule the whole season around that possibility.
Well, I do think it's amazing, and we didn't talk about this, but even if the Big Ten were to play this fall, there had been some players that opted out. One of the best wide receivers in the Big Ten's history in Rondale Moore at Purdue opted out. We only got to see him once against Iowa, and that was 2 years ago because he did not play this past season against Iowa. Rashad Bateman, Big Ten wide receiver of the year, I believe, last year, he opted out. And so there are already going to be teams that, you know, are going to be playing a little bit thin if we do play in the spring. It's interesting. The majority of the ones that have opted out are schools that I have not heard much backlash about this decision from. And I wonder if that's not a coincidence. Although Jeff Brohm did come out with a plan of his own for spring football, but I don't know. PJ Fleck's been very quiet up at Minnesota. A little bit surprised because he's very outspoken. I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see. I know Michigan had a player, at least one player that opted out, and they've not been very, they definitely voted, from what I've heard, sounds like they voted to cancel, but I could be wrong on that. We're at an hour 15. Let's wrap this thing up. We are going to come back next week, talk more hoops, and we'll see where we're at in a week. Maybe developments will continue. But by the way, Alex, we've seen the 7-day average. We're talking about new cases on average. If you look at the curve across the U.S., the curve is really going down. So this can continue to happen if the numbers can continue to go down, despite the fact that a lot of campuses are having to close down because of cases and spikes. I think that means we're in good shape. Would you agree? Or we're heading to a place where we could see good shape.
I think I'm kind of torn. My personal feeling is we'll probably have, hate to call it a spike, but an uptick, you know, in the next couple months because of schools and all of that. But I don't think it's going to be
a couple months. That's going to be the next couple of weeks. I mean, a lot of these schools already start classes in early August, late July.
Well, it takes a while to build up, I think, but I think we will see an uptick, whether it's a month away or whatever. But I don't think it's going to be these big, drastic spikes. Like early on, we did have a spike, obviously, but I think it's at the point now where we're probably not going to see that. Individual locations that haven't been hit hard are probably going to get hit harder. But yeah, I mean, it can't be bad to have cases going down, especially we just need to make sure that in areas that you have a lot of cases that ICUs are not overflowing and that we have beds and ventilators and all that. So it's definitely a good thing.
All right, let's talk NBA hoops real quick before we finish off today. We don't have our NBA. Again, I just find it so interesting that we don't have our NBA experts on here during the middle of the playoffs. And what is it that they don't have a couple hours of time to talk NBA hoops? What is it that's so, I mean, are they just...
They're in there watching the games, crunching the numbers, analyzing the data, and they're going to be better prepared for next time.
I don't know. I just... Whatever. You like that text? I asked, well, when are you available? Well, maybe in a week and a half.
That's when they'll be done with all their number crunching. They'll have predictions for NBA, you know, finals and maybe next season even. They're just, right now there's so much incoming data, so many games being played, they're just busy all day.
All right, let's talk NBA hoops. So, Alex, we made some predictions. We never really got to formally preview the NBA playoffs because, well, the storm came through and we weren't able to podcast before the playoffs started, but we basically knew the matchups. We didn't know who would get the eighth seed in the West, which the Trailblazers ended up getting the eighth seed because they were half game up on the Grizzlies, and then they won the first game, the only game of the play-in format. And so I said the whole, you know, I remember saying this, I don't know if I said it ever on the podcast, but if you were the Lakers, you were hoping and praying that the Grizzlies would win that play-in series because the Trailblazers are not an eight seed and they're not playing like an eight seed. So, you know, I made some bold predictions previously. I said that I thought Denver wasn't that great. I thought Denver, of all the top four seeds, they'd probably be the team that I'd want to play the most. When I say top four seeds, I'm talking about the two LAs, Denver and Houston. And then I also said that, you know, Memphis and although Phoenix played really well in the bubble, they went undefeated. I thought Portland was the biggest threat to pull off an upset against the Lakers over the Grizzlies, the Spurs, and Pelicans, the Kings, and the Suns. So, that's not good if you're a Lakers fan. And I also said that I was not buying into the Bucks and have never bought into the Bucks. And what did we see happen the other night, Alex? We saw the Magic dominate the Bucks. And that was not a game that was close, ever. It was never close. The Bucks made a couple runs. That was basically a double-digit game the entire way. And it's funny, I sent that text to Micaiah and said, what's happening to Giannis? What's happening to Milwaukee? And he sends back a link to a Bucks versus Celtics series last year. And because the Celtics won the first game last year, that's supposed to convince me that the Bucks are, you know, they'll be fine. On what world are you living that the Celtics last year are akin to the Magic this year? I mean, the Celtics are always pretty darn good. I mean, let's be honest. The Celtics are not what the Magic are this year. And the Magic are without Jonathan Isaac. The only all-star they had, was Nikola Vucevic even an all-star this year?
It was either this year or last year, I'm not sure. He should have been in the East.
So just tell me, are the Bucks in trouble? We saw them lose to Orlando. Are they in trouble?
If they lose the second game, you know, that's trouble. I don't see that happening. You know, they're not the most skilled team. I don't think they have the most firepower, but they...
And Giannis is not the best player in the world. I'm sorry. He's not. God.
Giannis is a better regular season. There's some guys that are better in the regular season because the way the reffing works, the way the defense works. Giannis is I'm not going to say he's not a playoff guy, but he has not been the same player in the playoffs. And I think there's multiple reasons. I don't know if you watch FIBA, but he was not a dominant player in FIBA. Regardless of that, though, the Bucks are a cohesive team that I think plays well together. And I think they'll get their act together. Teams like that tend to not, you know, I think they can tend to start slow, especially when they don't have a lot of excess firepower, which they definitely don't. They might take a little bit more to get going, but I think they will. I don't see the Magic as being, you know, if I had to choose a team out of the East that's a lower tier team to make noise, it's not going to be the Magic. Maybe
exactly.
The Heat or something.
That's why I'm saying they're in trouble. If they're they got thoroughly dominated in that game.
Yeah, I don't. And if that happens again, I will definitely be very surprised and worried. Not that I care how the Bucks do, but I'll be worried that they'll, you know, be in real trouble, but I don't think that'll happen.
So they do play tonight. By the time we release this podcast, that game will probably be in the books. But the Magic won the other night 122-110. The next game is set to start in about a half an hour. I don't know. I think they're in trouble. I'm not saying they're going to lose the series, but I'm saying to say that they're the prohibitive favorite to win the title, I don't buy into that at all. And I also don't buy into the fact that I think the Lakers are – I could see the Lakers still making the finals because LeBron James, you know, the LeBron James factor, who I think is the best player in the world, can basically will – we've seen him do it. We saw him do it in Cleveland, will a team to the finals. Now, it's a different format with the bubble. I get that. But I'll just say this about the Lakers as the other one seed that got upset. They're going up against a really tough Portland team. And I would not be shocked if Portland wins that series. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, Portland, you know, made it past the first round last year, and then they were just playing terrible most of the regular season, but they didn't have Nurkic the whole year, you know, because I had him on fantasy on my waiver or on my bench, IR. And then the season got canceled right when he was coming back. But anyways, you know, with him back, they have Lillard and CJ McCollum are both guys who can just go off. You know, if they're cold, then any team can beat them. If they're hot, they're almost unbeatable, you know, in a lot of games. So they're a super, super dangerous team. And it'll be interesting to see. I didn't catch the game the other night because of our internet situation, but I was not surprised at all to see the Blazers win that. I think, like you were saying, you know, if LeBron can will a terrible Cavaliers team to the finals, he can will a team that has, you know, AD and
and Kuzma and those and Dwight Howard and those guys to at least beat the Blazers. So I don't think they're in trouble yet. If they go down 0-2, that's obviously a problem. So this next game is really big for them. Not that they couldn't come back from 0-2, but it's definitely they don't have much margin for error. So it's a really good matchup. I mean, I'm not really a Lakers fan or a Blazers fan, so for me, it's a really great series. I think that there are no bad matchups in the West right now. It's a really good, playoffs.
The only connection I have to the Blazers is my wife and I went to the Moda Center, which is where they play, when we went out to Oregon this past year, and we saw Third Eye Blind out there, and we left early because they sucked. What's that?
I didn't know they were still performing. They're about 20 years past their prime.
Yeah, and I'm sure Ty Davis, you know, if you're listening, which we know you are, he probably wouldn't agree with that, but no, they suck. So I get emails all the time now about Blazer games. I'm like, God, just get me unsubscribe. I don't care. But I will say I agree with you. Dangerous team with McCollum, Lillard, Nurkic. They've got some good post players, and no, it's going to be interesting to see how they can, you know, can they maintain. I don't think the Lakers are all that deep. I've talked about that in the podcast. I don't think they're deep at all. They've got the LeBron factor, and of course AD is AD. So I definitely think they have a great chance of winning the title. I would not be shocked if Portland finds a way to win this series, especially if they win tonight.
A couple big factors is one, Avery Bradley opted out, and he's no offensive juggernaut, but to be able to help stop up Lillard and McCollum, basically the best backcourt in the NBA and one of the best of all time, him out, Rondo out, you know, that's where they're in trouble. And I think they'll be fine inside. The Lakers are good inside, but their perimeter defense right now has holes in it. And I think Rondo is questionable for this game. If they get him back, that'll help them a lot. But right now they're in some pretty hot water, I think, because they're in real danger of losing the second game, which is not good. Not good if you're a Lakers fan. So.
All right, the two teams that I thought were at least in my opinion, they were my title favorites, were the Raptors and the Clippers. Nobody was really talking about the Raptors, but they are the defending champions, and so far so good from my prediction standpoint on that. They looked very good in both of their first two games. Now, granted, they're playing the Nets, the undermanned Nets, who are without Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, I believe. Both those guys are out, correct?
Right.
They have been very solid against the Nets. They won by 24 in their opening game, and then the Nets made it a close game in this past one, but Toronto leads 2-0, so I'm going to stick with that prediction for Toronto. Let's talk about L.A., the Clippers. As you well know, I'm a Mavericks fan, and I've been frustrated with Dallas's lack of defense this year, especially since they began the bubble format. But I'm going to say this right now. I'm going to make a bold prediction, and I could be wrong on this. I'm a homer. I get it. The Clippers are in trouble. And if the referees don't give this series to the Clippers, I believe Dallas has a legitimate chance to win this series. And we'll get your opinion on this, but I don't know how much you've watched these first two games. I've watched each of them from start to finish. Dallas has dominated the series. They've honestly won 6 of the 8 quarters, and if it wasn't for a bogus pair of technical foul calls on Porzingis, the second of which came at the beginning of the second half, I think Dallas would be up 2-0 in this series. Dallas, first of all, let me rant a little bit more. The Clippers don't have an answer for Dallas's offense. They just don't. And let me establish this as well. Nobody has an answer for Dallas's offense. So you can say, well, you know, once they go up against a good defense, let me explain something to all those people, including the Krukos, that want to tell me that Milwaukee, you know, the numbers say Milwaukee has the best defense in the league. In case you missed it, now this was an overtime game, but Dallas put up 136 on the Bucks back on August 8th. And by the way, I saw Giannis airball 3 free throws a night. 3 free throws in that game. And you're telling me the best player in the world is going to airball 3? Give me a break. He also can't shoot the 3, but that goes without saying. So, Dallas cannot be stopped. There's not a team in the league, I believe, that can challenge Dallas's offense. The only way Dallas is going to lose, and very well could lose, we've seen them lose regular season games this way countless times. I've seen it happen. They lose big leads because they don't play defense. I can see that happening, but I don't see a team shutting down Dallas's offense. They are historically great. They are one of the, if you're going to go by the numbers, I know you don't agree with this totally, but if you go by the numbers, they are historically one of the best offenses to ever play in the NBA. They're better than Golden State was in their prime as far as efficiency. And that was probably the closest you could probably compare to this Dallas offense. LA can't slow Dallas down. And, you know, talk about problems. And I don't want to just rant about the referees on here, but they've been terrible. They've been absolutely disgusting these first two games. I think it's been literally a crime. And Dallas has found a way to keep this series even at one apiece. And if you look at not only the Porzingis ejection, and that's obviously difficult for Dallas to work through. They also had to deal with Luka Doncic basically being in foul trouble the entire game last night. He had 5 fouls at the beginning of the fourth quarter. And, well, what did Dallas do? They just send in Seth Curry, Trey Burke, Tim Hardaway Jr., Boban Marjanovic, and just completely dominate the Clippers. So tell me I'm wrong here. The Clippers are in trouble.
Well, I think I don't know if it's that they've not taken Dallas seriously or what, but what we've seen is, you know, the Clippers are, the exception of Zubats, they're pretty much undersized at center. And normally that's fine in today's NBA, but on Dallas, you have this special situation where you have one guy who's 7'3", and you have Ben Porzingis, and you have Boban, who's like 7'10". So you have Boban going, they're giving him the ball in the post, and I didn't see the game, but I watched highlights. He's getting the ball in the post and doing these little turnarounds.
Oh, it's no, like, no, hey, listen. You know what? Boban, if you know anything about Boban, is a very skilled big man.
Yeah.
If you know anything about him, he's actually a very skilled big man.
I've watched him for years, and I've never seen anyone design a play around Boban. Okay.
But he's very skilled. If you watch him, he knows the offense. He's very, very smart. He's a very, very intelligent player. And yes, he's awkward. He's
harder for any team.
What?
Like, I don't think you put him on any team and he's a starter.
No, he's not a starter, but I'm saying he's a very, very smart player. And the point is, he plays a lot like, what's unique about Boban is a lot of guys his size. Now, I know he's 7'4". He's unique in that he's huge, but let's be honest. Adam Woodbury was 7'1" and never has seen him, never even seen real attention from NBA players. Boban is an exception to the modern rule of just being huge doesn't put you in the NBA. He's smart. He's got touch, and yeah, he can dominate when he's in the game because the Clippers have no answer.
I mean, this is the problem that the Rockets are inevitably going to run into. The Clippers have run into, you know, when their biggest guy on the floor a lot of times is Harrell or, you know, somebody who's at 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", I'm not sure. But, you know, you got Porzingis who's 7'3", even if he's on the perimeter. And that's, you know, Porzingis doesn't play like a big man, but he can basically just pull up and you can contest that. It's like me contesting a guy who's like 6'8". If I contest, I can be literally right up in his grill and he can shoot over me without any problem. So,
and he's got Damian Lillard He's got Damian Lillard range. He popped one last night from about 33.
Yeah, I see him do that consistently. And I mean, you add in the disconcerting part if you're a Clippers fan is last night, like you were saying, that Doncic was out half the game, and you have guys like Burke and Seth Curry burning you. I mean, I could see that happening in the first game of this second game of the series. That for that to happen, it's not a good look. And, you know, I've said for years, I don't know if anybody else has really talked about this. I don't think we've talked about it on the podcast, but has Doc Rivers ever accomplished anything?
I do think he's the greatest. I do think he's the best coach in the NBA. I was just thinking that last night.
Yeah, I don't think
so. He won titles in, what are you talking about? He won titles in Boston.
Because think about it. When has he not had a super team under him? And even when he did, he still didn't win.
In his defense, what teams have won the title at all in the last 20 years besides super teams? Minus Dallas. So you could probably say Rick Carlisle might have been maybe the best coach in the NBA from that standpoint. But every other team who's won titles, Pat Riley, Pat Riley had Dwayne Wade and Shaquille O'Neal. You look at Eric Spoelstra, he had Bosch, James, Wade. You look at Shaq and Kobe with LA. You look at, the Golden State run. I mean, it's hard to win a title if you don't have at least two superstars.
But you've seen teams like Toronto, like San Antonio, and they're definitely in there that are still competitive to this day, and they have excellent coaches, whereas I've never seen Doc Rivers do anything with a subpar lineup. In fact, even when he had Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, they couldn't get out of the first round. So, if they end up losing this series, to me, you got to look at Doc Rivers, because obviously Paul George has pulled the disappearing act once again. In these first two games, he had, 14 points, I think. He's got less points than Boban. And, playoff P, this is the third year in a row now that he's not showing up in the playoffs. He's one of the best players in the NBA during the regular season. Maybe the best two-way player in the NBA. I mean, him, Kawhi, and LeBron, to me, are right there. And LeBron is not the best defender during the regular season. So, he's not showing up. That's a big factor. But, man, Doc Rivers... he's got some serious talent on that team. If he's not able to turn this around, if he's getting burned by guys like Trey Burke, who's turned into Allen Iverson, I guess, all of a sudden. Steph Curry.
You know what, though? We can probably look back in past podcasts from, 7-8 years ago when we started this podcast. I've always been a Trey Burke fan. You know that. I've always been high on Trey
Burke. He's always had that speed, but I've never seen him be able to put it together.
He was a baller at Michigan. And what I love about him in Michigan is not only did he hit a clutch shot against Kansas in that NCAA tournament game to overtime. That might have been a Final Four, actually. He played with Tim Hardaway Jr. That's what nobody talks about. Him and Hardaway Jr. played together at Michigan. These guys have tons of chemistry. I've never understood how Trey Burke didn't get more playing time in Philly. I don't understand how he hasn't been more successful in the league. Because he is a starter if you watch him right now in this series.
Yeah, I mean, they've got multiple guys that are playing out of their minds. And, right now, to me, the Clippers, and I'm not sure if this has anything to do with it, but you remember early in the regular season, they were resting Kawhi Leonard for load management in, October or something, November? he kind of started playing more. I think they were going to crack down on that or something. But, they were doing that, and I felt like they were kind of being – lazy, because last year the Clippers played, I will admit, under Doc Rivers, they played more than the sum of their parts. But you add two superstars and now your chemistry, and then I know they've had injuries and stuff, your chemistry maybe gets messed up a little bit. And to me, it just seemed like they were taking it a little bit not too serious. And right now, that's definitely what they're doing with Dallas, because Dallas is as dangerous or more so than Portland. They're a similar team, I think, in that respect. They're possibly more dangerous just because of the Doncic factor. He's such a dynamic player.
Well, and the Trailblazers, no offense to Nurkic. Nurkic is not Porzingis. They do not have that type. I mean, Porzingis is, I believe, one of the best players in the NBA because he is 7'3" and he moves like a guard. I've never seen anybody his size. I know Kevin Durant 6'10" and I've never seen anybody 7'3" move and play the way Kristaps Porzingis plays.
Well, for the record, I think Kevin Durant's more like 6'11", 7 foot. But
but that's still 3 inches shorter than Kristaps.
Yeah, he's definitely, Dallas hasn't been able to put the pieces together up until now. I think they've had injuries, they've had guys out, but now you're seeing these guys all at full power. And to me, what looks like kind of a lackadaisical approach by the Clippers, Paul George is not a feature of the offense or something. I don't know what his role is supposed to be.
He shot 14 field goal attempts last night. He just missed everything.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you don't see that in highlights. All I saw is the box score and he made a few shots in highlights. I'm thinking, where is this guy? So he's just missing then.
And Kawhi Leonard had what, 38 last night?
Yeah. He's
five or something like that.
And he's not, you know, I've always thought that, you know, Kawhi is, he's become a very good offensive player, but he kind of reminds me of LeBron in that that's not his, when he first came in the NBA, he couldn't score at all. Like, that's something he's developed, and I don't think he should have to carry the load. You know, last year in Toronto, people forget that how good Kyle Lowry was, and Van Vliet and some of those other guys really, they played excellent. And, you know, Leonard obviously was the star player there, but I don't think he should be carrying the load, especially when you have Paul George, who's, in my opinion, more of a scorer than Kawhi Leonard. I think he's a more skilled scorer than Kawhi Leonard, and he's not, you know, putting together good games. And man, if he's not able to get it in gear, this is going to be a pretty bad, you know, the Clippers are lucky that they won that first game, because if they were down 0-2 with the momentum, let's imagine that they lost that first game and now they're down 0-2 and Dallas looked as good as they did in this last game. I mean, you go down 0-3, the series is over. Like, nobody, I don't think anybody ever will come back from that. Unless it's just some crazy injury situation. But especially in this situation, if they go down 0-3, the series is over. So they're lucky they won that first game. They extended the series. I think the further the series goes, the better it looks for the Clippers, partially because Dallas is kind of an unproven, you know, their players are unproven. Doncic is unproven in the postseason. Porzingis, same deal. So I think, like, if this goes to a game seven, I, you know, lean heavily towards the Clippers. But if Dallas could win this series, if they could reel off a couple games here, you know, and get up like 3-1, I think they have a real shot at beating the Clippers. So they, you know, the Clippers need to be really careful right now.
How much of this series have you watched?
I've just watched highlights.
Okay, so did you see the Kristaps ejection, game one?
I didn't see that. I just basically read about it. It wasn't in the House of Highlights for some reason. I guess they just offense.
House of Highlights?
Yeah, just that. I subscribe to that channel. Like, you know, I don't know if the NBA channel has more comprehensive.
Yeah, they're doing 10-minute highlight videos as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm hoping I can start watching all these games. You know, our MediaCom, I got Tubo TV, which basically gives you all these channels, TNT and ESPN, and can't use it because we have no internet. And my dad is on 2G now because I used so much of it during the storm situation. So,
but Tubo, no, I haven't. Or Fubo?
It's either Fubo or Tubo. I'm not sure.
I think it's Fubo. Yeah, I did a trial of Fubo once, and it haven't had a lot of glitches for me, but I know that's one of the more major ones. But no, I don't think Kristaps deserved to be ejected, and for the refs, the reffing has been just garbage. It's been garbage. I don't understand, and it's been consistently garbage for four quarters. Hardaway Jr. last night got jacked and hit out of bounds, ran into a wall, and no call. Gave the ball to the Clippers. We had the I mean, I can't even begin to talk about all the garbage calls. L.A., I believe that if Kristaps, in case you didn't know this, Porzingis got ejected game one when Dallas was ahead at the beginning of the third quarter. Dallas was ahead at halftime. They were basically ahead the entire – they fell behind. I don't know if you know this. They fell behind by 16 to the Clippers. Okay. Stormed back. And within a quarter, had taken the lead by 14. I don't know if you'll ever see a 30-point turnaround that quick ever again in the NBA. I mean, seriously, it was ridiculous, especially in the playoffs. And I believe that if Porzingis had not been ejected, that game was Dallas. So Clippers are very fortunate that KP got ejected that first game. That's all, you know. That's all I'll say. And you watch guys like Dorian Finney-Smith, DeLon Wright. We talked about Boban. We talked about Porzingis, Curry, Burke, Hardaway Jr. is terrific. Maxi Kleba. You know, Maxi Kleba, nobody wants to talk about him. He's 6'10". He's bigger than anybody on LA. Okay. So, you know, I just find it very interesting. And if you watch Dallas and you saw highlights, they are the most, I admit the best NBA season I've ever seen was 2011 because Dallas won the championship and loved watching Dirk and Jason Kidd and the Jet, Terry and Sean Marion and all those guys. This is the most, I'm not saying they're the best defense, definitely not, but this is the most exciting and just fun to watch offense I've ever seen in the NBA. I know you're not a Mavs fan, but have you sat down and just watched how their offense operates? It is literally seamless. I mean, I can't tell you how many dunks Porzingis gets. It's unbelievable. It really, truly is. And it's everybody on this team, whether it be Burke, DeLon Wright had a just tremendous play last night. I think it went Curry, DeLon Wright to Porzingis. Hockey-style assist to Porzingis for the flush. It is literally a thing of beauty, this offense.
What surprises me is, it doesn't surprise me anymore, but how much, and I know that they basically won last night without Doncic, essentially, but what surprises me when Doncic is on the floor is how much he still has a defender on their heels, because he's one of the slowest guys in the NBA. That, you know,
he's
they
got
did
an incredible ability to stop and stay under control. He can speed up, he can drive and then basically slow down and either draw contact. His ability to find different spots on the floor, I've never seen that. I know that they compare him to Jason Kidd. He can find literally anybody in any position. He always seems to find the right guy.
Well, what's strange to me about that is I kind of felt like when I first saw him play, I thought that, you know, that was going to happen, and then I felt like he was going to have a bit of a sophomore slump, and I haven't seen that yet. I felt like, you know, he does have an inherent weakness, potential weakness. It hasn't shown up yet, but in the fact that he's as tall as he is, you put a smaller defender on him who's going to be able to poke at the ball. You know, maybe he's not going to be able to handle the ball as much as he normally does, but what I've seen so far is that guys are afraid to play up on him. They're on their heels constantly.
Well, Patrick Beverley tried to the very first game, and it wasn't within a couple quarters. Beverley had four fouls.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's today's NBA or just his skill level. I think it's probably a combination. But right now, defenders are constantly on their heels against him. And to be honest, it's obviously easy to sit back and say this, but if I was one of those guys and I had to guard him, I'm not going to let him dribble all over the place like he's doing. But, you know, it's not like these guys aren't professionals. They know what they're doing, and they still haven't figured out how to slow him down, because it just seems to me like he commands the floor way too much for somebody who's his size. Like, you know, you watch LeBron, who's basically a point forward, which I don't know if you'd call Doncic that. You know, it's kind of everything's kind of gotten blurred, but, you know, they're similar size guys, not much difference in size. And LeBron doesn't quite have the command of his dribble that Doncic has. And, you know, smaller guards, LeBron is not.
Well, LeBron, in Doncic's defense here, as great as LeBron is, he's more athletic than Doncic. We know that. We definitely know he's clutch. He does not have, I don't think he has the vision that Doncic does. He's a great passer. Don't get me wrong. LeBron James is a great passer. But Doncic, I don't know that I've ever seen vision like him. Like I said, the closest that I can think of is probably Jason Kidd. Steve Nash was pretty darn good. I'm sure Pete Maravich back in his day was, I know he could shoot threes like nobody's business. Jerry West, those guys, you know, a lot of those guards could really, their vision was spectacular. But to me, I've never seen the vision of a guy like Luka.
Well, you know, I think that comes back to what I'm saying about, I don't know if you quite know what I'm talking about, but of the way that defenders look like they're on their heels when they're guarding him, he's able to keep his eyes up and survey the floor, and he's not worried about getting the ball poked out. And to me, like, if I was playing him, and I haven't seen either of these games, but you would think that Beverley would be a guy who would be able to.
Beverley did not play last night due to an injury. And so that was going to mention that. That's the one X factor that I can see. I'm not saying he's going to be the difference maker in this series, because, again, Dallas won last night really without Doncic a lot of the game. But if Beverley can stay out of foul trouble, which he got in foul trouble with game one, if he can stay out of foul trouble and stay healthy and play the rest of the series, he could be a major factor. But again, I've not seen anybody. The best defense in the league was, according to the numbers, is Milwaukee, and Dallas just, they beat Milwaukee and did whatever they wanted. They have done basically against everybody I've watched Dallas against. They basically do what they want against them when they're actually locked in. I saw last night as they were up by like almost 20, they kind of got a little complacent, and you think, okay, these are young guys. They got to play the final finish, and they get complacent on defense and even a little complacent on offense. But when they're locked in, I don't think anybody can stop them. I really don't. I don't know who's going to stop what team in the league can match up with Porzingis, Doncic, and then all the shooters Dallas has around him.
Well, what I saw, especially in the regular season, was, and you tend to see this, you tend to think that the reffing is going to get a little bit more stringent as far as defense. You're going to allow a little bit more defense in the playoffs, but so far it hasn't really translated over. Obviously, the modern NBA, you can't really play defense on the perimeter to an extent. You have to be pretty, you couldn't play less defense than NBA guards are having to play, because if you touch anybody at all, you're getting a foul. And even if you don't, if your hands aren't touching them, you still get foul calls. So obviously Doncic has taken advantage of that. His size, which could be a potential weakness, has not been. But as far as guys matching up, I think Houston probably matches up, even though they don't have the height. Houston matches up with them. Westbrook is a better athlete than Doncic and is a pretty good defender.
It depends.
I think good Utah news is, can match up Dallas, with them.
Dallas isn't going to be playing Houston unless it's in the Western Conference Finals.
I honestly, I haven't even looked at the bracket.
Well, they're going to play. I haven't either, but I'm assuming this is the way the brackets normally work. The winner of 1 versus 8 will play the winner of 4 versus 5, and so that means the winner of 2-7 plays the winner of 3-6. So I guess that
Mavericks 7, right?
What's that?
The Mavericks are 7, is that right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah, so
I guess that kind of moves us to, we are getting approaching 2 hours, we need to wrap this thing up, but that moves us over to the 3-6 games. Let's go to the Nuggets and the Jazz. Donovan Mitchell puts up 57 points game 1. They lose in overtime without Mike Conley, without Bogdanovich. And they still didn't get Conley back last night. Am I right in that?
Yeah, I think he's supposed to be back tomorrow.
So they were able to eke out a win. I said going into this thing that I thought that Denver was the most, I think they were the most, what's the word I'm trying to think of?
Underachieved.
Yeah, susceptible, I guess, to an upset. They're 3 in the conference, and I have no idea how they are, because to me, Jokic is, I tell you, I like Nikola Jokic. I think he's very unique, but I look at him, I watch him play, and I watch Porzingis play, and I know I'm a homer. There's no freaking comparison. I know he's a bigger body, plays differently, but there is no comparison of who I'd rather have on a team. It's Porzingis every time.
Well, what I still haven't figured Denver out, because with Jokic, I've always had the feeling that, I don't know if he's lazy or what, he's always been kind of fat. He's always been fat, and he's slimmed down now. And I thought, well, maybe that'll speed him up. And same thing with Jamal Murray. The guy is a monster when he's on. Like, he's Damian Lillard level scorer. And yet last night he didn't show up. Like, he just didn't show up. I don't know where he was at. I was watching the game, and I don't know where he was at the whole game. I don't know if you watched the game where Mitchell had 57, but Murray put them away in overtime. I mean, he took over the game, and he basically did what Mitchell had been doing.
Well, that's also because Mike Malone stuck Joe Ingles on Murray, which makes no sense on this earth, why you're putting the least athletic, oldest guy on your team to guard the youngest, most athletic guy on the other team. That makes no sense.
Well, Quentin, you're talking about Quinn Snyder. He kind of reminds me of Ferentzen, Kirk Ferentzen.
Oh, what did I say?
You said Malone, but
Denver's head coach. Yeah,
you know, he's Quinn Snyder's a good coach, but he does not make adjustments on the fly. And it's something that just annoys the crap out of me. But it's kind of like Kirk Ferentz. Unfortunately, he makes adjustments, but only game to game. Like during game adjustments, he's not. He just, I don't know if he doesn't like to do them or what, but he likes to stick with the game plan, yada, yada, yada. And you put Ingles on him. I understand the thinking, you know, you got Mitchell who's carrying the load and you don't want him playing on both ends of the floor. You don't put him on Murray. But you have other guys. You got Royce O'Neal. You got different guys. Ingles is just not quick enough. He's not even close to quick enough. He has length, but he's not close to quick enough to stay with Murray. And, you know, when Murray gets hot like that, I put a stopper on him immediately because the guy is a real problem if he chooses to show up. I just don't know where he's at. And Jokic kind of shows
he's either there or he's not. He doesn't ever, right. He's not a consistent 20, 30 point scorer. He's more of like a 10 point scorer or a 50 point scorer.
Yeah, it's like if you put his skill level in his body, I'm talking about Murray and Jokic because they both seem to follow the same trend. If you put their skill levels in a guy or you put somebody like Kobe Bryant's mind in their body, either one of those guys would be totally unstoppable. Like they would be great players all time. I really believe that. It's almost like Shaquille O'Neal. You know, Kobe said that if Shaq had had Kobe's, his own work ethic, that Shaq would have like 10 rings. And he's totally right. You know, Shaq was lazy. He relied on his dominant size and all that, and he still won rings. So, you know, guys like this, I think it's a mental thing. And right now, you know, I'm not complaining because Utah blew them out in this last game without Mitchell, you know, scoring much. And obviously Utah shot a lot better than they ever do. But, you know, Murray and Jokic, neither of them showed up. They could run the offense through either of those guys anytime they want, and they just didn't show up. So,
I'll tell you, you got to be happy that you guys that Utah lost the tiebreaker with Denver and Houston. I'll say that. Or with Houston and OKC.
I mean, I was pulling so hard because, you know, they've met the Rockets. It never works out well. Gobert is not good out on the perimeter. He can't switch off, which is another thing that they, you know, Denver hasn't taken advantage of yet. But yeah, I mean, nobody wants to, no Utah fan wants to see Harden and especially Westbrook. Especially
I think I'd rather see Denver than OKC, to be completely honest. I could be wrong on that. Maybe that's, I don't know. We'll see what happens with, let's see, what was the OKC? Yeah, so they're playing, okay, the Rockets won 111-98. So Houston leads that series 2-0. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, we saw Tyler Cook play a little bit last night because it was because of the blowout. I think Utah's playing too much of George Niang. I'll just say that. I don't know. Well, I don't know what this infatuation Utah has with fat, slow white guys. Well, I guess Niang's not completely white, but fat, slow guys.
Niang, I don't know if you saw this. He misses three threes in a row from the corner off offensive rebounds.
I didn't see it. I heard it.
That's not like him. Like, there's a reason he was taking those, and he should be taking those because he's like a 40% three-point shooter normally, and he cannot make anything right now. So he needs to just stick with it. He's not – obviously, he's slow, but, you know, he can shoot the three. He's got enough size that he can body guys down low. You know, and right now, that's one of, in my opinion, Utah's biggest weaknesses. They have no backup for Gobert. Tony Bradley's a G-leaguer, in my opinion, and – you know, right now they're getting away with it, but they're not going too deep, Ron. So I think Niang does need to be in there sometimes. He's just not knocking out shots. If he can't make threes, he shouldn't be on the floor, but that's not been the trend. He's a solid three-point shooter. And it is strange to see him out there missing, and as slow as he is, you know, he looks like he shouldn't be on the floor, but normally he's not that bad.
Houston and OKC. Houston leads that series 2-0. You've got Miami, the 5 seed, up on the 4 seed Indiana, 2-0 now after today's result. And you've got the Celtics just dominating the Philadelphia 76ers. Let's kind of couple those three matchups all together to finish this thing up. Do you expect any turnaround in any one of those series? I personally do not. The only one I could see maybe changing would possibly be Indiana, Miami, but I really have a lot of faith in Miami winning that series. I don't see any of those changing. I could see any one of those being sweeps, maybe one or two go 5 or 6. But I think all those teams that are up, specifically Miami, Houston, and definitely Boston are all going to win with flying colors.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I thought that Philadelphia could be a, I think they still could be a good team. Why wouldn't they be? They just don't, I don't know what their deal is. But I think if any of them have the potential to turn this around, I think they definitely do. I don't particularly like the Celtics, so I'm kind of hoping for a good series there. I thought it was going to be a good series. But the other two, I think the Heat are going to finish out that series. And the Rockets, I don't think, are going to have much trouble with. You know, they're the Rockets, so they could go ice cold and miss 45 threes like they've done before, but I don't think they'll have any trouble with OKC.
So again, the last two game twos are tonight. Magic, Bucks, Trailblazers, Lakers. So by the time you listen to this podcast, those games will be complete. We shall see what we shall see. But some pivotal game twos on Friday, including the Raptors and the Nets, the Nuggets and the Jazz, the 76ers and the Celtics, and the Clippers and the Mavericks. And then on Saturday, game three is between the Bucks and the Magic, the Pacers and the Heat, the Rockets and the Thunder, and the Lakers and the Blazers. We'll see if the one seeds can bounce back tonight and even their series, the Bucks and the Lakers. Anything else to add before we head out? We'll be back with everybody next week. And we do have Matt Gatens coming on the show here. We're talking to him about, again, with all the storm and just everything happening, it's been tough to coordinate a time. We are going to get him on the show. We'll get the Krukos back on the show. We'll talk some NBA hoops. Theoretically, the first round could be over by next weekend. That's how fast this thing's moving. Anything else to add?
No. There's so much going on right now. It's just kind of a good time, you know, to be a sports fan compared to the last few months. So
not a good time to be a Big Ten football fan, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just comparing. So I wish it was universally good. But
yeah, well, we shall see what we shall see. Hopefully, we get spring football and definitely basketball. It's, Dan Gavin, I put in faith in that man to make things happen on a nationwide level for college basketball. So for Alex Bratta, I'm Corey Bratta. We'll talk to you next week on week 125. But this has been week 124 of Bratta's Branded Thoughts. NBA playoffs continue. College football in the Big Ten, the Pac-12 do not. But some college football may happen this fall and maybe more in the spring. We'll talk to you next week. Go Hawks and go Mavs.